And on today's show, another person gets Ebola, which is a doctor actually, and Obama's popularity is going into the tank so much so that they're leaving. Next on today's program.
Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And a gracious good afternoon, and welcome once again to another exciting episode, as it is Saturday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, and I am Robin, forgetting whatever sleep used to be like, and over there in the other microphone is Cliff, who's retired to know what sleep is like.
I know, lots and lots of sleep. I've been catching on about 65 years of it.
That's right. They say that we're kind of meant for each other in a balancing act, because what sleep I don't get, Cliff makes up for me.
Yeah, really? Yeah, it's been really great. I've been retired for, a while now, and sleeping in has been real neat. The only thing is, I have so many doctor's appointments now, I'm so old, that I constantly
have
to
look it up. How old is he?
I'm old, really old, yeah. Old as mold.
Old enough to remember Johnny Carson.
Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah. Oh, God. That's the last time I really watched the late night show, because since Johnny Carson, they've never had anybody on there worth watching.
Yeah. Anyways, to have people on here, Cliff, for 15 points, tell us how our listeners will contact us.
By phone.
Thank you, Cliff. Next, back to you.
646-721-9887 is the telephone number, and that's not hard to remember, especially if you write it down and put it on top of the screen. 646-721-9887. Of course, my eyes are getting so bad I can't even read it on top of the screen.
Yes.
You'd think I'd have it. We've had this number for 5 years, something like that. Anyway, you'd think I'd have it memorized.
You would.
I don't. I don't ever memorize anything.
Yes. And also,
I don't even remember my name.
And also, we're trying a little different method of uploading our show today. And a couple of weeks ago, we had a caller that was using Skype. And sometimes Skype lately has been in a really good mood, because you can go to our webpage, by the way, while we're live, and click on the Skype button if you have a Skype account, and it'll connect, and it comes up with some weird number on my screen. But what happened last time that somebody used Skype is that it blanked me out. You could hear Cliff, and you could hear the caller, but it blanked me out. And that's, like I say, Skype can be weird. So we're doing it a different way and testing sound quality, how that sounds too. And sometimes you just got to experiment. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to do that during a live show and pray everything goes right. But
the whole idea is to see who wins.
Yes, and sometimes,
and hopefully Robin will win.
Yeah, hopefully, too. And speaking of, by the way, again, if you're listening to us live, here in Eugene, Oregon, we have a storm going.
Boy, do we ever.
And right now, Cliff says he's had several power outages. We've had one here that I'm aware of.
So if we just disappear all of a sudden, it's because we have no electricity.
Exactly, and I'm not hooking up the bicycle again. I'm sorry, Cliff.
And chances are we're not going to have warning to tell you. Yeah. We'll just disappear.
Yeah, it'd just be, and going on with the ship.
Yeah, really. Exactly right. Yeah. The wind has been blowing. Well, the wind is blowing right now quite hard, but the wind has been blowing in gusts. I mean, it's one of these things where you hear people on television saying, well, it's only like a freight train going by. Well, It has two or three times, but there's been that much wind here. And of course, when we hear the whistle going, there is a freight train going by because we're not that far away from the tracks.
That's right. So again, if that does happen, we apologize. Same thing, there's some popping in the background. I don't know if it's coming through, but again, that could be because of the weather interfering with the internet lines. But so with apologies aside, 646-721-9887. If you're listening to the program through the archives, again, you can participate by sending us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. Like us on Facebook and Twitter. We got a little bit more Twitter traffic going on, which is good to see, and I'm still trying to figure out Facebook, but, you know, maybe one of these days I'll get more into it. But if nothing else, it requires 20-some-odd likes to really get noticed. So if, even if you hate us, go out there and like us and get that number up. We got 18 out there so far. Let's try and make 28 sometime by 2015.
A real quick thing here. I just wanted to mention this, and it's only for people who care, but the vocalist for Cream, Jack Bruce, has died. He was a bass player and vocalist, and he was a part of other things too, but I think mostly he was remembered for Cream, and he's lost it today. Unfortunately, he died at the age. And of course, now, this was not, you know, some people, it's really, really sad when we lose them, but this, he was 71. He's enjoyed a long, respected life and solo career. So I just wanted to say, you know, goodbye and that sort of thing.
You know, that's really easy to say if you're 20 years old.
What?
When somebody is up there in, you know, 70, 80s, 90s, 100, and, you know, well, they had a really long and respectful life and everything. Yeah, right, you're 25. I'm
25, and I know he's had a long life.
No, but what I'm saying is that, like us, you know, when you're 25, being 70-something is a long ways away. As you get older, it's like, wait a minute, I'm not ready to go yet.
Oh, I'm not either. And I'm only a year away from him.
Yeah. Otherwise, it'd be broadcasting from the grave.
I'm expecting at least another 20 years of forging my way through the mucky. Never mind.
That's a good intro.
Okay.
Forging my way through the muck of life. It's me.
Yeah. Really. Anyway, I just wanted to say goodbye to him because, you know, often we just forget about people. And when I see that somebody that, I say everybody knows, I think everybody knows. Everybody knows about Cream. I don't know if they know about Jack Bruce.
Yeah. By the way, before we get into some serious stuff, which does happen sometimes on this program, a little unofficial poll I've been doing with unofficial people is like here in Eugene and Lane County, respectively. You know, we're getting into the voting season and stuff, and which would be a segue into one of the three topics that we have. But getting into the voting season, and I've been talking with one of the Lane County commissioners, and there's things going on in Eugene. I won't go into details because, you know, like I say, we are a nationwide program here, and everybody would be going, I don't care. But the unofficial survey that I want to do, and, you know, please feel free to, you know, answer by Twitter or email or whatever, how you feel. To participate in local government, would you prefer going downtown to like the city hall meetings or town hall meetings and participating in person that way, assuming that you can get off work in time to go to it? Or would you prefer like the interaction that a forum like Blog Talk Radio here allows people to do? You know, you have your forum, you have your way to call in, you got a little bit more control than you do on networks, being a guest on PBS or something like that. So far, the results have been that they prefer this format because sometimes they have these meetings and it's like 3 p.m. You don't get off work till 5, or they have it at 6 p.m. and now you're having to get off early or get right off at 5:00, beat downtown traffic, find a place to park, and all that type of stuff. So it's very inconvenient. And we just want to give you, you know, put that out there and get your thoughts on what you would rather do if you are going to participate in local government, what form you'd rather would work out better for you. So, again, you can...
Well, I participated for quite a while in local government, and I always went to the meetings themselves, to the actual meetings. Of course, this is a small town.
Right.
So, you know, going halfway, well, going all the way across town, it's still only a couple miles, so...
Well, I was going to say, you can go walk around the block and go through City Hall, gas station, Safeway, and back home.
Almost, I tell you. It's close.
And, by the way, a little side note is that I'm kind of teasing about this little news article back when we had the first and second fence jumper at the White House, that it would soon become a contest. And apparently, looks like I hit the nail on the head with that one when, again, another fence jumper tried to make it. And this time, the Secret Service dogs, undercover puppies, actually did their job and caught the guy, jumped on him, and held him until, the Secret Service.
Which is exactly what they're supposed to do. Why they well, you, first of all, you realize that all the people that were guarding the fence and guarding the yard and whatever you want to call it have been replaced since the last time we spoke, because they've lost their job, but they aren't doing that anymore. They've got all new people. And so it's about time they turned the dogs loose. Now, you see, you know, somebody asked me, well, what do you want to do, shoot them? Yes, I want to shoot them. I mean, if they've made the
if you jump the fence and you're running at full sprint towards the White House, yes, you're dead.
If you've jumped the fence for any reason at all. In fact, and the thing is, you know, they say, well, you don't want to shoot him because that would be killing someone. That's the idea. You're supposed to be protecting the president. Whether the president's there or not, you're supposed to be protecting the White House. And so, consequently, if you need to shoot the person, you shoot them. And if you kill them accidentally, fine. You know, most people, first of all, we've got several people guarding the White House yard or area there, if you wish. And consequently, we could have more than one person shooting. But, you know, the idea of killing that person is one thing. But, you know, the point is, in my book, if you've got a gun and if you aim it at somebody, you're going to kill them. And so consequently, that's the name of the game. And if anybody has the audacity to jump the fence that's guarding the White House, they're asking to be killed. They're asking to be shot. And
exactly.
So I think this is fine. We finally did it. We shot this person. We didn't kill this person in this particular case. And that's okay, because we stopped him. And so consequently, and any time that happens from now on, anybody that decides to jump that White House fence, they should be expecting to be killed. I mean, that's just the name of the game. You don't do this. Is the most important house in the world, period. And I mean the world, not just the United States.
Right.
This is the most important house in the world, and you got to be kept out of it, and unless you're invited in. And so, consequently, if you're kept out by being shot because you tried to get in there by crook, then fine. Anyway,
yeah. Well, and you know, and one of my little side things I do is being an artist, and I was just thinking what would be a really cool little cartoon if I was doing the political type art stuff, and that would be the, because according to the article that, I was trying to stop this auto start stuff, is the, after he jumped the fence, the two canines, you know, bulleted out across the yard, pounced on the guy and held him until Secret Service agents could arrive. Now, fast forwarding to the way the Secret Service has been handling the last couple jumpers is that, you know, dogs do their job, jump on the guy, stand on top of him, waiting for the Secret Service to arrive, still waiting for the Secret Service to arrive, insert crickets and nightfall, still waiting for Secret Service.
That's about it, because Secret Service doesn't want to get hurt.
Yeah,
you know, but that's all right. I don't care if they want to get hurt or not. The point is, they've got guns. Guns can be pointed at the person and shot from a great distance away, so that they're not going to get hurt. They're just going to shoot him. And the dogs are going to be turned loose. And if we don't have enough dogs, we can get more.
Yes.
We can, you know, Let's have.
I mean, why?
I think
why not?
Only two dogs there, but let's put 20 dogs there.
I mean, why not? I mean, you ready for this?
Okay.
No offense to canine, but the White House has kind of gone to the dogs. I'm
well,
sorry.
Well, we may as well make sure it's true.
Yes. There's going to be more fence jumpers as people are kind of going.
Well,
I predicted.
The more people that get away with it, the more they're going to be, and that's.
It's going to be a contest, like I said before. It's going to be a contest. How far can I get before I get caught?
And it should be about over the top.
Yeah.
Or,
1600.
I mean, because you know we're not going to ask the dogs to jump up and catch them as they're going over the fence. But once they get over the fence, right below the fence, they should be turned loose and you know you could see the person jumping over the fence. I mean, it can't be something you don't notice. I mean, how could, if we have such gaps in our security that someone can jump the fence and not be noticed, then we got to change the amount of guards that we have on duty. So if there anybody notices somebody jumping over the fence, you loose the dogs, and if you've only got two dogs, you know, we need to get more. I mean, it's not difficult to do. We can afford to, you know, I'll pay for a dog. I don't know if I want to pay to feed them. They get hungry.
They do. They kind of last longer, too, if you feed them.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is, you know, we should have enough dogs that we can let them loose and they can do the job. And we don't have to take the possibility of hurting anybody unless this person is armed and dangerous. And regardless of who he is, he should be taken down. You've got to patrol that. You've got to take care of that White House. That's the thing. You just don't let that go.
Yeah.
And we have.
Exactly. And speaking of letting things go, 646-721-9887. As I mentioned earlier, we're getting into the voting season, and the controversy about requiring voter ID has been in the issue and figuring that it's racist because of doing that. But however, it's not so racist if you want to go buy beer and they ask you to.
Or if you want to drive a car or do a lot of different things, you've got to have ID. And one of the most important things that we do in the United States is vote. We are one of the few countries that allow us to vote, and our vote means something. So let's make sure it means something by requiring ID for it.
Exactly. And it is one of those rights that is reserved for U.S. citizens. Unfortunately, there are people that feel that who are in this country illegally that feel that it is their right to cast a vote, therefore nullifying. God, I hate auto startups. Mute. I'm being ignored by my computer. Oh well, it's not the first time. Okay, thank you. Make a note not to go to that site, USA Today. Anyways, where we're going with all that is that the Supreme Court is allowing Texas to enforce its photo identification law at the polls in the upcoming elections, reaching the opposite conclusion from a similar Wisconsin case earlier in the week. The order coming in 2 days before early voting is set to begin completes a series of voters' right challenges that have come before the court on an emergency basis. The justice also upheld the new restrictions on voting in North Carolina and Ohio, which that did not include photo ID requirements. But like I said, it is a right of U.S. citizens only. But if you think that illegal aliens cannot vote, don't be fooled. Like in Oregon, we have the Motor Voter Act that you go in there and you get your license or registration or whatever, and they'll ask you if you'd like to register to vote. And in fact, coming up in November as well is the vote asking Oregonians how they feel about illegal aliens getting driver's license, which one of the things that, if you remember back a couple of years, we were forced to change our system because of the Homeland Security, and our driver's license were not going to be allowed to be used as ID to go on airlines if we didn't require a birth certificate. Well, under what Oregon is going to be asked to vote on is allowing people that are in the country illegally who do not have a birth certificate that they can show to at least show 1 year of residency and you have a driver's license.
I disagree with that. You know, if you don't have a birth certificate in the United States, you know, if you're a United States citizen and you were born in the United States, you have a birth certificate. It is here. It is available. Period.
Yeah.
May cost you a couple bucks, but you know, and the thing is, I've heard so many people say, "Well, it's too expensive." You know, a lot of people can't get it. Yeah, that's one of the most important things you have, is your driver's license and your voter ID or whatever, your identification card. So if you want to miss a meal and buy the card, I mean, it's not enough to be a big problem. And so even if it does cost a few bucks, you got to do it. That's just the simple of it. You know, let's face it, I want people in the United States, and I don't mind people being in the United States, but make sure they're legal.
Yep, let's exactly. Get them. Everybody has some sort of ID or whatever, and so the argument of that you can't afford to go down and get an ID or don't have the time is bunk. Even though the person, when this was a big deal, and this teenager, I believe it was, college student, who said, "Well, I don't have time, I don't have the money to go get my ID," was asked to come and appear, I think was before Congress, well, to take the public flights to get to D.C. She had to get ID because you're not allowed on a train, on a bus, anything, a public transportation without ID anymore.
Well, it's just not that hard to get. And if you're in college and you have enough money to go to college, you have enough money to get your ID.
Oh, yeah, even colleges have student IDs. A lot of them, it's required.
Yeah, but there has to be a specific legal ID, and I think a driver's license or an ID card, because I don't drive at the moment, but I can get an ID card,
right.
And it's about the same cost as it is to get a driver's license, and then I don't mind paying the price because you know they do have to take your picture and they do have to put it on there and stick it on the little card, and it costs, you know, it isn't much, but it does cost money. And you know, I don't expect them to pay for it, so consequently, I'll pay for it. But you know, and if it's really a matter of getting it or not, you know, I'll go without one meal.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, you don't hear this argument when it comes down to buying beer or cigarettes.
Oh well,
it's amazing that people, because you still have to show ID that you're of age, and
just buy the beer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That you know, you never hear well. It's racist that you're not allowing me to buy beer because I don't have an ID and I can't afford an ID, but I can go down to Ford to buy that six-pack that I require ID to purchase.
Right. That's another thing entirely, because I am not in favor of beer. So consequently, we'll not get into that.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm a real stick in the mud, because I don't think drinking is a necessity ever.
Well, whatever your opinion on that, the thing about requiring, especially with over 11 million illegal aliens, and some are actually voting, you know, it forces us to reassure that the right to vote, which is granted to U.S. citizens only, is followed. And unfortunately, because of the government allowing these people to be here and have, and you know, put roots down, is forcing us to show ID. So in my opinion, it's not discrimination, because you can go in and, like even one person did at one point, they came in and said, went to a polling place and says, do you have a person registered by the name of Eric Holder? And they said, yes. That's the attorney general or former attorney general, wherever he's at right now. And they were going to give him the pamphlet to vote. And he says, do you want to see my ID? Nah. So he could have actually have voted under that name and thereby taken away Eric Holder's right to vote.
Right. And you know, there are many people who just are that lax about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And voting, I'm afraid in my opinion, that's a pretty important thing, and it's not something to be lax about. You don't just kind of just, oh, well, what the hell, and consequently, I get really upset about that. Consequently, you know, maybe I understand that there's an awful lot of polling places, an awful lot of people involved with the idea of voting, to pay them all and to require certain specifications for them to do it is difficult. But still, I just can't see taking such a lackadaisical attack to it. Let's think about it. That's important to vote.
Speaking of voting, and also the people that have been voted for should take it as seriously as the people that went out of their way to vote for them. And what I'm referring to is what happened recently in Maryland, as President Obama made a rare appearance on the campaign trail to support the Democratic candidate for governor in Maryland. And what was kind of interesting about this in particular is that when Obama came up on stage, people got up and started walking away.
There's an awful lot of people unhappy with Mr. Obama's the things that he's done or not done. So far, he's really not done much of anything unless he was forced to. And even then, he's hesitant. I don't know. We've only got a couple years left, and I know I keep saying this because that is a long time. But we can get by without him there.
Well, and the other point is that we got crises going on, or at least, you know, things that he should be, as a CEO of the country, so to speak, you know, at the helm. You know, we have the beheadings going on. We got the Ebola crisis going on. We have more and more cases of Ebola showing up in the U.S., which I'll get to in a minute. And just under perspective, like when that second or third beheading, and this is really terrible, and, you know, we're going to get the people, and I'm late for my tea time. It's like, you know, at least pretend you care. And just like with this, he's done like over 57 fundraisers this year alone. And like, you know, as somebody said, that he worked so hard to get into the White House, now he spends so much time not being there. You know, do your job.
Well, that's the only thing he likes to do, though. Let's face it, you caught it right by the horns there. He worked so hard to get into the office. That's what he likes to do, is to work so hard to get into the office. So he's still working that hard to get into the office, even though he's already there.
Right.
So he has nothing better to do than work hard to get into the office. So that's what he does. Well, that's the only thing he knows how to do.
Right. Unfortunately, it's like with the Ebola, is that this is one thing that's hitting more home instead of, you know, like, okay, yes, unfortunately, there are people that are being beheaded overseas. Again, how does that affect you personally? Not really that much unless you are a relative, friend, et cetera. But here, we're seeing more cases starting to appear. And like we said last week, at the height of the Ebola outbreak at one point, not recently, but, you know, in history, 4,500 people died from it. Well, we see this one person that came over here. I believe I can't remember off the top of my head if he's legal or not, but, you know, he died. And then a couple of nurses were infected. Now we got a doctor, which is now infected, and a New York City doctor gets the virus, and his fiance and two friends are now quarantined. And so, you know, more is starting to appear more and more, and we have a porous border, as they admit that over 70,000 children, if you consider 15 to 20 years old children, unaccompanied, coming into the country, that are being scattered now after being processed throughout the United States without medical exams, and the Bureau of Education is forcing them, or forcing schools to accept them without, again, the medical certification that your kids have to have in order to go into schools. So, I mean, all it takes is one kid to be a carrier in a school of 2,000 or more people, and look how fast that was spread.
Okay, now wait, what was that?
What?
You're saying, look how fast it was spread. Where
it would spread. Is that if...
It would spread. Okay.
It would spread.
The only way this can be passed along is actual touching that person, getting the any kind of whatever, I can't think of the word.
Okay, all it takes is like, say, bodily fluids or whatever, but if you're sweating a little bit, it can transmit that way. If you're in school, especially a crowded...
Yeah, but how many times do you touch people who are sweating?
It doesn't take that much.
Well, I think it's much more difficult. We're talking the fear about millions of people catching Ebola is I think way overrated. I don't think it's a possibility. The fact is we've only got one Ebola person. God, I can't even say the word. We've only got one Ebola person that has died in the United States of Ebola. And we've got a couple, three others that have supposedly got Ebola, but we don't know for sure. And the rest of them are all just, they've just been at close proximity to them. We're pushing this as though it was an epidemic, and it's not. It's not even close to being an epidemic. We don't have people with the problem.
Well, it can be an epidemic if people, if it's not treated like a possible epidemic, and that's what happened with those two nurses. And then they get on public, and all it takes is just somebody sneeze on somebody. But right there, you're transmitting bodily fluids.
You go to a Ducks game.
How many thousands of people are there? And you sneeze on somebody, and we're in the rainy season, and then that person sneezes on somebody, and
I don't. First of all, we don't. Not many people are sneezing on me at a Ducks game. And second of all, we're not going to have many people here. The people are not here that are carrying Ebola, because there are only two or three places in the United States where they have even been, and basically the hospitals there have been very careful. See, we've already got five hospitals that are designated places where Ebola, not students, but Ebola patients can go. And consequently, these hospitals are well prepared for taking care of these Ebola patients, and they've talked about this on television over and over and over again. I think we're in pretty good condition as far as the Ebola thing is concerned, because we just don't have that much of it. Now, even in the rest of the world, we don't have that much of it. There's only, 40,000 people in the entire world that we know of that are subjected to Ebola virus, and they're most of them being not being necessarily quarantined, but they are being kept in five areas. They're not just let to go. And as far as flights are concerned, as far as it's very, very, very distant idea that we're going to have an Ebola virus outbreak anywhere in the United States.
Well, we're not doing anything to temporarily restrict flights. Even Mexico. Since when?
Since about 2 days ago. I mean, this is all happening very quickly, and we are restricting flights and where they've come from. In other words, certain flights from certain areas that are Ebola problems, we don't allow them in, and they are required to stop outside the United States, and they're taken care of and checked on. I mean, we are doing an awful lot. We are restricting flights, not all of them, but not all flights come from them. And consequently, we've got doctors that are looking into this and looking and it's being very carefully controlled.
Okay, yeah, I see that where passengers flying into the U.S. from three Ebola countries will have to fly from the one of five designated airports.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
We are doing it. We are doing it. And again, I think we're doing the right thing, because we shouldn't be here scaremongering everybody. We're making everybody aware. We're panicking everybody in the United States over one case of a problem, and this is not what we should be doing.
That's the thing. It's more than one case. Yes, one person has died so far. We're now several other people have gotten it. And when you read cases like this, now this is from the Associated Press on October 25th. Over 10,000 infected by Ebola worldwide, and it says here that the UN
worldwide.
Yes, the UN Health Agency said Saturday that the number of confirmed probable and suspected cases has risen to 10,141. Of those cases, 4,922 people have died, and its figures show that about 200 new cases since the last report 4 days ago.
But this is not in the United States.
No, not in the United States yet.
Well, no yet to it. We're already taking real careful caution to make sure it isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're making too big a thing of this, and we're going to scare people to death, and that's not the idea. I mean, do you realize how many people die of the flu?
No, I don't have those.
About 20,000.
Yeah.
I mean, huge numbers as compared to one Ebola person. And let's even if we've got 10 people that are infected with Ebola or 50 people infected with Ebola in the United States that are in one of these hospitals that are designated where they can be, and anybody, you know, people have been very careful so far about if they got a temperature. So many people have been, because they don't want to die. I mean, you know, if you want to have an incentive to report yourself as having a temperature, dying is probably it. I mean, most people don't want to die. So consequently, they're going to say something about it or go to the hospital or talk to somebody about it, do something to take care of themselves. And that's basically what's been happening in this country. Now, in other countries, it's one of the big problems, of course, in a lot of these countries, you don't have a hospital to go to.
Right. I mean, or the hospital is not prepared.
Yeah, it's not like the United States. But the United States has definitely prepared itself, I think, for this problem long before it ever became a problem. See, this is not something that's all brand new, but the big problem of being scared to death about it is brand new, and mostly the media is doing this.
Well, I just hope and pray that, you know, you're right. But again, like I said, is that on the onset, as far as any type of handling any type of emergency, my confidence in our leader to be competent enough to take this seriously, I don't feel very comfortable.
You see, this is one experience where I don't believe our leader has anything to do with it, so to speak. Our leader, supposedly. The point is, we've got the people in these hospitals, the doctors, and the people who are involved with this that are taking the lead in it. The president really has very, very little, if anything, to do with it. He could have, but he doesn't have enough smarts to be able to do that. And so I'm very happy to hear and very happy to believe that the hospitals and the hospital controllers and such are taking it in their own hands. And it's about time they do.
Well, here's the thing. Let me interrupt you for just a second. Here's the thing. I would rather have the president come out and say, you know, we are taking this seriously, we're taking steps, and mean it and not go play golf afterwards, versus having him come out and say, well, you know, if I had a son, it'd be like he'd be Trayvon Martin. And, you know, as far as, you know, the president choosing where, as a leader, as a world leader, or I use that term loosely, but as the elected leader in the United States, to at least pretend he's taking the role seriously. I mean, whatever happened to the, you know, the honor?
You've got to have one thing before you can pretend to take the role seriously.
What's that?
Intelligence.
Intelligence.
And he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the smarts to do that.
No, he's a used car salesman. I said that in 2008, and now he's enjoying the lavish lifestyle of the rich and famous on our dime. And when it really comes down to, you know, doing anything right and even just pretending, like I said, to build confidence that he actually has things under control, he fails miserably.
But I don't believe there's very many people, if he, in the United States, who believe that he should be doing that. They know he's capable of it. They know he doesn't understand what's going on. They know that his expertise is in campaigning, and so they let him do it. And consequently, that's fine. We'll let him do it. And let the people who have smarts take care of the world.
Yeah. Or have him be smart enough to like say, stand down, get out of the way. Maybe that's what he's doing. Maybe that's why he, you know.
No, he doesn't even have enough smarts to do that. He runs in there and he jumps in there and he says things and he doesn't know what he's saying. So consequently, we just ignore him and do what's right. And that's what we're going to be doing.
I wish it was that simple. Just okay, Mr. President, just don't worry about it. Go have a nice game of golf. Go out there and do a rally for some loser Democrat. And don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. We'll manage the country for you while you're gone.
Is he doing anything else?
Is
that what he's doing? He may be thinking he's taking care of the country. He may think he's doing something, but he's not. I mean, as long as we recognize that he can't do what he's supposed to be doing, and we find some other way to get around it, then we're fine.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for him to come out and say that golf is racist because most golf balls are white.
Well, okay. Can you imagine what it would be like if they were black or if they were green?
No, it'd be like...
Good luck playing golf.
Yeah. Have you seen my ball?
The only place you can play golf is on the desert.
Yeah, and I'm still suppose somebody would find offense to that. Same thing like, the most golf courses are green, and somebody from Ireland might take offense to that.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know how to do anything about it. He doesn't know what to do about it. And so consequently, he hasn't been doing much of anything about it. He does go around and talk to people, but he talks to small groups mostly in this particular case, schools, high schools and colleges, and they basically are smart enough to understand what he's saying or not saying.
Yeah.
And consequently, we're more than happy to let him go around and do his thing. But we've got enough people in this country that are in a position of prominence that have smarts and have a brain. We're going to get along fine.
And I'd like to see more and more of, sadly, like in this one gymnasium where in Maryland, where it says some 8,000 people turned out for the event held in a noisy school gymnasium, but a steady stream of people walked out while the president spoke and a heckler interrupted his remarks.
Well, you see, I can see that happening. First of all, if it's a noisy environment, he doesn't have control of it, and so consequently the people can't hear what's being said, so why bother to stay? And so consequently they're going to walk out, and a lot of people don't want to hear what he has to say, so they will walk out. And that I can understand that.
Well, let me throw a kind of changed topic here for a second, but kind of related. Herman Cain, that was the 2012 election?
Yeah.
Okay. Herman Cain and Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's thinking about running again. It's like, dude, you had your chance. You didn't take it serious. But Herman Cain, on his Facebook page, has been criticizing the president quite a bit. And granted, if you're familiar somewhat with what happened in the run, I mean, he kind of came out of nowhere and was very popular with the people and, of course, became the target of a lot of negative stuff, which is why he decided to drop out. But it's kind of like, so the question is that even if Herman Cain decided to take the chance again and run again, based on Obama's regime, would you feel comfortable in taking a chance on another non-white person?
Okay, now you've changed horses in the middle of the stream. I thought you were going to say, would you take a chance on Herman Cain? Under no circumstances. He's already shown that he's chicken. But as far as a non-white person, there could be many, many non-white persons that are smart enough and have enough guts to jump in and take the lead. And I wouldn't mind voting for one of those. But it's so hard to identify what they really, really stand for, really want to, until you get them in there.
Right.
So,
well, that's the thing, once bitten, twice shy. I mean,
the thing is,
not
you can't do that. I mean, when it comes to voting for the president, because you once bitten, okay, if you don't like him, then you got to wait 4 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. Or like you said, oh, what's 4 years? What can happen in 4 years? Well,
a lot.
A lot.
I discovered that already. So I in my opinion, perhaps it's the way of removing him from office should be easier.
I agree with that. Is like I've said for a long time, is to, same thing with healthcare. We should borrow what works and don't use what doesn't. Our current system to get rid of somebody like a rogue president, I asked that question a long time ago. What happens if we have a rogue president? Well, we got, you know, the impeachment process that nobody wants to do, and it takes so long, is to borrow something from Parliament in some respects about the vote of no confidence.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm more and more probably agreeing with you that we should sit down and work that out. I don't know exactly what it requires to vote no confidence. But I haven't seen in Congress, I haven't, you know, we put have a room where everybody can sit down and there's enough chairs or tables or whatever for everybody in Congress to be there at once. I've never seen it full. I've never seen all the people there. They just don't bother to go. When they go to become, then when they get elected, they just figure this is their free time now.
Right.
We cannot do anything we want to except our job. And we need to change that a little bit.
Exactly. Or like somebody asked and got in trouble with Harry Reid's bodyguard when he asked, Mr. Reid, you as a public official, how did you, you weren't rich when you first went into office. How did you become a millionaire?
Well, of course, there's a million ways you can become a millionaire when you've got that much power.
Exactly. And that's part of the thing, too, is that, you know, limitations on power, more checks and balances, because apparently our system of checks and balances isn't working. It could be happening in the background. I don't hear us trying to make a change from our mistakes, like, you know, requiring, like, for example, like the birth certificate thing, whether you believe in it or not, perhaps it's not a bad idea to, you know, when you are elected, that you must prove that you are actually have the legal right to be in office. I have to prove I have a legal right to work.
You have to prove a lot of things, and I agree with you. I agree that of all things, if we're going to elect someone as president of the United States, we should at least know whether or not he can serve.
Exactly. And hold him to a higher standard than just the average person. You know.
I don't know. I don't even know if we need to hold him up to a higher standard. But a lot of times we're saying, okay, we're going to make you president, but and then you can do any fucking thing you want. Pardon me. But that's what's happening.
Right.
And we're not even holding him to a real standard, a regular standard, as much as other people.
Yeah, it comes down to the thing. We hear on the news all the time that Mr. Obama went ahead and enacted this law, and he's in violation of the Constitution, which brings up the question, if you enacted a law that's in violation of the Constitution, doesn't it automatically nullify the law?
I would think so, but we still let it happen.
Yeah, Obamacare is an excellent example. Only Congress can pass a tax. Obamacare, if you didn't have insurance, was a fee. The courts ruled, changed it to a tax. So that makes it an illegal tax because Congress did not pass the tax. But yet we are going,
Congress changed it to a tax, so they effectively passed it.
I didn't see that, but it was the courts that did change it from a fee to a tax, so which, again, it's now the law, and if you don't have health insurance or meet the, like I said in the beginning, qualifying health insurance, you're going to pay a hell of a lot of money, especially after 2016.
So we're doing an awful lot of this. I mean, we're required to have a driver's license.
Right.
I mean, to drive, that shouldn't be a requirement. I mean, to drive, maybe we can do a lot of, but, you know, you don't have to have a driver's license. Just wait till you get caught and get put in jail. you know, that'll be sort of an incentive to get a driver's license, I would think. Wow. But I mean, there's so many things that we do that are no longer following our rule of law.
Exactly. It's like, well, same, like you said, if you, like, for example, if you're an illegal alien, you already broke one law. So having a not having a driver's license is breaking another law. Who cares?
Yeah, really. If you're already against the law, if you already should be put in jail, then who cares if you are going to break another one?
Yeah, that's the point. And especially,
the bad part is that who cares if you're going to break 10?
Yeah. You know, it's just a misdemeanor. And chances are you're not giving, you don't have ID on you, so you're just giving whatever Social Security number or ID that you've made up or whatever name that you're going under, and
right. You
don't care.
That's sad. And I know that happens because I worked in years ago when I worked in a store in a mall in California, and I'd have people come in and to buy something, and they'd hand me their identification. And when something didn't work, they'd hand me another identification and see if they could get it on that. And I could get two or three of them. I don't know who they were. You know, you have no way of knowing who they were because they changed from minute to minute.
Right.
And that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, and we'll get into why I didn't do it, but as far as I'm concerned, the moment they changed the identification purposes, I should have called the police. Because
right.
I don't believe they should have been able to do that. But on the same token, if I did that because of where I was, I would never have made a sale. So I didn't.
Well, that's the point, because using somebody else's ID, I believe, is a felony, especially Social Security number.
I don't know if it is or not, but I know it was done not just a couple of times and not just a few times, but a whole lot. And like I say, if I didn't accept it, and I just wouldn't have made any sales, and it wouldn't have been much use working there, because without making any sales, you don't make any money. Everything is a commission.
Right. And then that's kind of what started a lot of what's going on with the U.S. now with the immigration stuff, is that companies were seeing huge dollars, and so they were kind of turning their backs on a lot of things and encouraging, press one for English type of thing. And
yeah. That's
why some companies, there's some here in the Eugene area, there's I can't remember the name of the company. They're up in Bonita, Oregon right now. If you are bilingual, you make $2 more an hour than you do if you only speak English. It's a call center.
Well, yeah, you know, I can see that, but unfortunately, and I see your opinion too, but having a second language, no matter what it is, not just Spanish, but whatever it would be, makes you more valuable.
Well, yeah. And unfortunately, if you're not bilingual, it makes it harder to get a job in some areas.
Yeah, in some areas it's almost impossible.
Exactly. And so, I mean, we can go more and more on that. But
it was interesting because when I worked in a store selling stuff to people in an area that required bilinguals, these people would bring in their kids. And almost always their kids could speak English and would translate for them. And I relied on the kids, boy. I use them a lot.
Exactly. 646-721-9887. 5 minutes remaining in the program. If there's anything that you'd like to talk about, give us a call. Again, if you'd like to try Skype, we'd like to try that as well, as we're trying a different method of communication here. And definitely want to hear your opinion about the sound quality of the program. And if this works, we'll continue as we're trying something totally different. 646-721-9887. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, about this or anything else that's on your mind. And no, we're not going away yet. So how do you feel, folks? Do you believe that, even if the president can't do anything directly about Ebola, he should at least, being the leader, should kind of act like a leader and like he's taking it seriously? Or do you believe with Cliff, like, he should just stand aside and let somebody else?
Well, I don't want him to act like a leader because he's going to get it wrong. That's just all there is to it. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's nothing more than he is a campaigner. And that's since he's a campaigner, let's let him be a campaigner. Let's not ask him to do something that's out of his area of expertise, period. I mean, let him leave it alone. He's only going to screw it up, no matter what it is. And so consequently, let him go out and campaign, let him go out and do little games and talk to people, and then I'll leave him, let him be. Because we've got, what is 435 or something like that people in Congress, that at least half of them, and probably quite a few more than half, know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. And let's let them do what they can do and talk about, instead of just making them go along with the president, because he doesn't.
Which brings up another point as we're getting into the election season, is thanks to the fad known as the internet, before you vote, don't just go by name recognition. Go check out their records. And one of them is, gee, how often do you show up to go to work?
Yeah, it's kind of sad because, like I say, I can't remember. Well, a couple of times I can remember they were doing something special, but most of the times when you see Congress, it's a bunch of empty seats. That's all it is. I mean, it's just sad. You see the English Parliament, and you see usually it's full, and they're yelling and screaming and hollering.
Exactly.
And making their voices known and making their opinions known, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. They don't mind yelling about it and telling about it. But in our Congress, we just sit there and quietly let things happen.
Yeah, in Parliament, like I say, they get involved. The only time it seems like there's any, and just like I say, seems, when Congress is having hearings about some athlete taking drugs. It's like that's not even a role of Congress to even get into.
Really?
It's just like a really quick story here. A couple years ago, in Oregon, for a financial crisis, the governor held a special session to discuss the budget. And the first item on the table that the legislature did was vote to nominate the border collie as the state dog. They not once talked about what the original special session was all about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's pretty important to have the border collie as our state dog. I like the border collie.
Yes, but was it a fair? Was it fair to like the cocker spaniels? I don't know. I mean, were they representative?
I bet not a wiener. I bet a wiener dog didn't get one vote.
I bet you. Yeah, he probably didn't get. He probably didn't have a. What do they call it? Somebody come in and really push for him.
No good campaign managers.
Good campaign managers or. Our fundraisers or whatever, it should have been put out to the vote of what we wanted and what to represent our state as far as the canine thing. So, and what about the cats? The cats could be offended too. It could be a racial thing.
Oh, the cats should definitely be offended.
Yes.
Definitely be offended. Yeah. Of course, if we had cats big enough to beat up all the hot border collies, we'd be in trouble anyway. So, okay.
Yeah, it'd be a standoff. Anyway. That's our show. We'll see you next Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific time. We'll catch you later.
Bye.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.